Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Okay then, good evening. Welcome to the Watford Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. Let's cut straight to the chase. It's not exactly the show that we're hoping to have this evening. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to leave it to our co-hosts here, Andy and Matt, as into what we talk about this evening. You've got two options.
Go on.
Watford or Eurovision.
B, please, Jake.
Would you like to take B, Matt?
I think it's probably for the best, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where do we start? I mean, well, it was a fantastic night in Tel Aviv.
No, I have to say, it's one of the positives to really come out of yesterday, Andy, was to discover that you are a Eurovision fan.
Yeah, I quite like Eurovision. It's good fun. It's just a night of, I mean, the night on Twitter is good fun. You know, all the social media things around it is fun. But, you know, it's just a bit of a laugh, really, isn't
it? It's a pick-me-up, isn't it, after what happened?
Well, yeah, it's annoying that on the occasional good song that you get, and you think, oh, this will do well, and suddenly, what on earth are they listening to in Georgia or, you know, Belarus? Then they don't vote for actual decent songs, and it's just balmy, isn't it? It's just absolutely bonkers. But yeah, we should probably talk about football at some point, shouldn't we?
No. We've got plenty of time. Okay. Just to let you know, this evening, Watford fans, we've got an extra half hour. There's no Wimbledon fan show this evening, so we're extending both the other shows. So we're with you until 8:30, and then non-league again. That means an extra half hour, 8:30 until 10 p.m. So yeah, let's just continue Eurovision for a moment. And what I'm thinking is, well, we don't usually come in and out of breaks. Sometimes we play a little bit of music, you know, by request. You know, if there's a particular one you liked, you can ask, and I'll endeavour, producer Dom, to play it for us in and out of the breaks. And again, if anyone's listening this evening, if you liked any Eurovision songs, or if you hated any, and for whatever strange reason you'd like to hear it again, we could play a little section.
Is Madonna's new song available
no.
in that list?
That one will not be getting played this evening. That was absolutely awful. Dreadful, wasn't it?
So bad.
Did you predict the winner?
No, I predicted, Netherlands won. I predicted they would come second because I knew they were favourites going in. Yeah. I wasn't blown away by his song. It was kind of, for me, it was forgettable, I think is the phrase. I predicted Switzerland to win because that was a tune.
It's a tune.
It was an absolute tune. and then, you know, there's always some dodgy ones that you think, or that we think are rubbish, but actually do really well. You know, I thought Azerbaijan would do good. I know you thought Israel would do a lot better than
that was
did.
My one big mistake from the evening.
But I think we can all agree, we predicted UK to come rock bottom.
Yes.
So that was, you know, that's a point for all of us.
I didn't think it was that bad.
Matt, this is the thing. You know, are you a regular Eurovision fan?
I know how it works. I know the kind of tactical nature behind it.
It's not even tactics. People are convinced it's tactics, right? Fair enough. If you're Norway, you tend to naturally vote more for Sweden and Finland, okay? You know, if you're France, you tend to vote more for, you know, the neighbouring country, maybe Switzerland. If you're Spain, maybe Portugal. That's natural. Just like a UK entry would vote more for Ireland because you're more familiar with that song. It's not tactical thinking, oh, I want that country to win more than the other one. You're just more familiar with it. And people are completely like held up on it. The UK entry was absolutely rubbish. I mean, it was a nice song. Okay.
It was catchy. It's what I'd describe as catchy. It's sort of one you'd maybe hum along to in future through no choice of your own.
Zero production.
Yeah.
Right? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. You've got to tick boxes to win Eurovision. You've got to have a good song, first of all. You'll never win Eurovision with a bad song. That is a fact. It helps massively to have a story. So behind maybe the artist, you know. So remember Portugal a couple of years ago, the story of it, maybe his sister. Or maybe the song like represents, you know, something of significance, maybe, you know, LGBT, about some kind of travesty, some tragedy that's happened. You've got to tick boxes. And UK don't play the game.
That was Ukraine winning it, wasn't it, a couple
Absolutely.
Of years ago with the song about Crimea.
If something like that has happened to your country, you can play off that in Eurovision. Not play off it, but you know what I mean. You,
yeah.
It can help.
I mean, yeah, a Brexit song probably wouldn't go down.
No.
Wouldn't go down a storm, yeah. Would it? That would be the UK entry. But for the UK, I think, well, they were 16th, wasn't he? So it was sort of
yes.
almost right in the middle of the pack out of 26, and just very, you know, forgettable. Like, there was nothing that stood out, nothing that when we got to the end of song 26, you think, oh yeah, UK is that bit of, you know, stage yeah. production stood out, that chorus, that bridge stood out for me, and it just passed you by. It was a toilet break.
Yeah, it was just okay. So for anyone listening right now thinking, why on earth are they talking about Eurovision? It's because Watford lost, and we are trying to avoid talking about it for an hour and a half. So we are, to a certain extent, filling. Producer Dom now is back in the studio. Dom, just so you know, we are going to play the odd Eurovision song as little break exits, okay? Yeah, nod. Yeah, okay. Happy with that. And again, for people who think it's rubbish and nobody watches it, just some stats before we move on and do talk about Watford. Ratings, okay, for Eurovision last night, 6.9 million viewers with a peak of 7.7. For comparison, this year's Brit Awards had 4.1 million. The last X Factor final had 5.5. And Strictly beat it with 11.7. But yeah, people do watch Eurovision.
People do watch Eurovision.
As much as you want to slag it off, yes, Dom, I can see you shaking your head. You do not watch Eurovision. If you don't like Eurovision, that's fine. You know, I never in my life have tweeted about how rubbish Game of Thrones is. I don't watch it. I don't feel the need to. So if you don't like something, why do people do that? Just let me enjoy it.
Exactly. It's a good social occasion as well, isn't it?
I mean, I watched it on my own because nobody else likes it.
I watched it with some Kiwis and Aussies, and they were, you know, equally confused.
And did the Aussies love it?
Well,
or do they not? Because that was the thing. They were included in this competition because we were all convinced. Everyone was like, well, obviously it's not in Europe, that's a given, but apparently Australia love it.
They were into it. Yeah. Yeah. One of the girls, it was her first time ever watching Eurovision, so she was completely bamboozled by the whole thing. But as the songs wore on, as the competition got into it, she was really invested in it. Like, oh yeah, I really like that bit. I really like that song. You know,
and you don't have to like nice every song because people say, no, oh, that's rubbish. Like, right, okay, that's fine. You're allowed to dislike it, but it's the event. It's the occasion.
Yeah.
The voting part's good as well. I just
drama.
Like it. I like it when they go to the
Sweden's
like you've got the
face by the
oh,
way.
Yeah,
oh, absolutely.
My word.
I mean, you also have these terrible presenters.
Sorry. Can I just make a shout out, please? I'm not sure if you saw. I mean, Lucy Ayoub. If you listen to Love Sport Radio, she was one of the hosts last night. Oh my word! Yes, beautiful.
There you go.
Beautiful.
There you go. Interlude over. I mean, but I just like it. I like the you know the sort of anticipation. The kind of no one takes themselves too seriously.
No, it's just
I think
good fun,
that's
isn't
why
it?
It's quite appealing.
It was really frustrating at the very end when they you know had the split screen of Netherlands and Sweden. Yeah. And Sweden needs 253 points
and
to win.
They really dragged that
250. Like, so it was
like more than Dermot has ever done on X Factor.
It was like they were just double checking the calculation on a calculator behind the side. Like it's definitely 253 points, and then 93. And his face was there's that scene in Friends where Joey doesn't win an award and he starts like going off on one and that, he really wanted
he
to
not
do
hide that.
That
well, did he?
Not at all, no.
Yeah, John Ola Sand as well, you know, the big boss, the least charismatic man in the world. It's just why you're in this position. It's like, fair enough, like the boss does not have to be charismatic, but you just wouldn't go on screen. Like, why do they go to him every year? They go to him, it's like, yes, okay,
yes, we have a winner,
yes, thank you, brilliant. Okay, Eurovision chat done. Thank you, chaps. I enjoyed that very much. I struggled to find anyone who could contribute as much as you two have.
Non-league show next, yeah?
Yes. So thanks for coming in. In a word, before we take a break, describe yesterday at Wembley as a Watford fan for you.
Emotional.
Matt.
One word. Bittersweet.
Ooh. It is, yeah.
Well, hyphenated.
It's a better word than yours.
Right.
I had longer. I paused. Okay. Andy just came out.
Don't make excuses for him. I'm going to take a break. When we come back, we will actually talk about football.
Love Sport.
Obviously, not the day you were hoping for. Let's start from the very beginning of the trip and getting to Wembley. I mean, the last thing you want to say is, oh, it's the occasion, because that is, it feels that. It's just like you were there for the ride, you know, just to be part of it. Because ultimately that wasn't the case. But now, because of what did happen, we can just talk about the occasion, can't we?
Yeah.
As a day itself. And did it live up to it, with the build up to it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It was, good that the tube strike was called off, because that was a blessing.
Oh, did it get called off?
It got called off, yeah, thankfully. But in like in the week, I was talking to John Mooney about this, presenter on From the Rookery End. In the build-up, the last week we've had, not necessarily the content published online by the club, but the content that's been published from fans throughout the week. Mm. You know, we've had blog posts, we've had vloggers doing stuff, podcasts, a couple of good podcasts from the Rookery End team. Hornet Heaven did a really emotional podcast in the build-up to it. It's all been building to this crescendo of Saturday, and it's been fantastic to sort of be a part of it. You know, on Friday, all of the schools in Watford, you know, had kids dressing up in yellow or writing out good luck messages to the team, and it's been such an awesome build up to Saturday. Yeah. And what you, obviously the result wasn't what we wanted. It was embarrassing in a word. But to be part of that build-up and something so historic gave you an enormous sense of pride going into that game. It was just disappointing, of course, that the 90 minutes didn't play out how we wanted.
Yeah, it was a real unifier for the town. I think I was fortunate enough to be in the town before the game and just trying to soak up a little bit. And it's just little things like you'd walk around and there'd be bunting, there'd be balloons, you'd walk down the shops and there'd be, quite tragically actually, there were a couple of unnamed shops in Watford that the staff were wearing Grassi's Heroes, but obviously the first batch was spelt incorrectly. It said Garcia's Heroes.
Did it? Yeah.
But the further you went down the town, they did get it right eventually, so that was good. there was a real buzz. I think what you get with teams like Watford, because we know that we're not used to these sort of occasions, you sort of enjoy it that little bit more. You know that these aren't, you know, cup finals don't come around every season. So we kind of enjoyed it more. I think people will kind of relax in a strange kind of way because we knew we were massive underdogs. But just soaking up, chatting to fans, a Tottenham fan bumped into me in the pub and he said, you know, very drunkenly, he said, I'm not a Watford fan, but I love Elton John. And for me, that was kind of that was the first thing for me that kind of thought, you know what? And he was like, I hope you guys do it. And it was kind of the underdog tale. I know we don't want to overplay it too much. We weren't there to make up the numbers. No. We felt we could win. And if we didn't believe that, we shouldn't have turned up. But the build-up was just fantastic. I got a real good buzz. And especially on that journey on the train in, you just saw Watford fans piling in. And of all ages as well. I think that was really special. It was like being with people who recall 84, who were there, with people who've grown up on tales of what happened in 84. And I think that was really special.
Yeah, the whole community embraced it, didn't it? You know, Watford Council put up big screens for fans who couldn't get to the game to go and watch it for free. And that's pretty cool. You know, on what Matt said, you know, people in the street just coming up to you. I wear my Watford coat on a daily. And I've had people come up to me in the street and say, oh, you're a Watford fan. I hope you beat Man City. And just like a tiny exchange, like 20 seconds. And it just puts a huge smile on my face, just thinking, my club's in the FA Cup final. Yeah. And that's what my week has been, is just, you know, anytime someone's spoken about football, like, oh, even someone at work just saying, you know, who has no interest in football, are you looking forward to Saturday? And my eyes just like light up. I'm like, yes, I'm looking forward to Saturday. And now the next week is going to be awful because I'll get the chat over and done with on Monday morning, I think, tomorrow morning. But it's been awesome build up. Awesome build-up. Just a shame that it didn't live up to it yesterday.
Yeah. So talk again about the build-up and being in the stadium and the atmosphere, because it did seem pretty epic. Obviously, I was simply just watching it on the television. Again, we can go on and talk about the way the fans were when the scoreline was what it was, but kind of beforehand, was that like anything you'd experienced before?
No, not for, I mean, Watford fans have often been harshly ridiculed for being, the semi-final, we were accused of being outsung by Wolves, and, you know, there was lots of accusations we couldn't sell out our allocation and we're a small town club who shouldn't even be here. It was almost like we were undeserving, which is horrible. It's not a nice sort of, you expect it from opposition fans, goading and all that kind of stuff. It goes part and parcel with being a football fan, but a lot of that was quite nasty. It was, you know, Watford in the final, I got no chance, and the scoreline proves that. But I think just being around a lot of people, I think that was one of the sort of uplifting moments of the day, you know, in a strange kind of way, was we're 5-6-0 down and I'm just thinking, let's not let it be 7. I didn't know that the record hadn't, you know, was very close to being broken. I assumed it was, but then just to see this kind of show of defiance from the fans, almost like we're here, we're determined to enjoy it. The only small sort of nugget of disappointment for me, other than the scoreline, was there were a few fans around me who left at 75-80 minutes. And I understand, obviously, if you paid a ticket, you deserve to be able to do what you want with it. Some people have come from quite far away. I understand that. But I just feel if you're in the final, just enjoy it.
See it out.
Yeah. And I think that's what we did. I think Watford fans and the 18-8-1 led it as they always do. in the bottom tier, singing from first whistle to last. And there were quiet moments, as you'd expect when you're getting thumped, but I thought that was that rousing display was quite uplifting in a strange kind of way.
Yeah, the pre-match atmosphere was honestly probably the best atmosphere I've ever experienced in my time as a Watford fan. You know, I went to the fan zone before the game, and I don't drink at football. I don't really do beer, but everyone was just like drunk happy, like just drunk on happiness, and just we're at Wembley for an FA Cup final. You know, majority of Watford fans, maybe 70%, weren't at 84. It's been 35 years, and fans were there with their family, they were with their friends, taking lots of photos. You know, like Matt said, all ages. You know, there's little kids with all this face paint on. There's oldies who were there in 84. It was fantastic. The whole Watford community sort of got involved, and then walking out into the stadium, it was great that a lot of Watford fans, that we're speaking to Jacob later, he was pitch side for when the teams were announced. Myself and my sister were on Football Focus. Lots of Watford fans were able to get involved in different aspects of the day and have that story to tell. You know, to future generations. And I think for me, like when the teams came out to do their warm up, and this is, you know, before a ball's been kicked, the roar from the Watford fans was incredible. And I've only ever heard a roar like that for just the pre-match warm ups when I went to AC Milan versus Juventus like 4 years ago. Because the atmosphere in Europe is
it's different.
It's different. Yeah, you've been to three games in Germany recently. And it is, I would say the atmosphere in Europe is probably a little bit better.
It is.
I sort of got that continental vibe from what we were producing before kickoff. And you know, you watch it every year, and you wonder if it'll ever sort of wear off a bit. And I think for Man City, it's reached that point a bit, because when Abide With Me started playing, you know, I had tears rolling down my cheeks. Everyone else did around me as well. Yeah. I've been listening to that song
for years.
throughout the week and through the years, thinking, oh, you know, it's just two verses of a hymn. But you stand there and you listen to it. It was sung beautifully, and my word, it hits home.
It's lump in the throat time. Yeah.
Irrespective of the result and the outcome of what it was, do you really hope that that's given kind of a platform and also a taste to the players and the management and the club in general that, you know, this could be repeated again, or certainly not going to have to wait as long as you've had to for another occasion like that?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be another 35 years. Scott Duxbury and Gino Pozzo put out a statement after the game yesterday thanking the supporters and saying, you know, this is only the beginning. And that's what we want to hear. We know the club has ambitions to reach that next level. Yeah, we didn't achieve Europe this year, but we might not achieve it next year. But that's where we're going. It's not going to be another 35 years before we experience another major final, and hopefully not too long before we win some silverware.
Yeah, we're not meandering aimlessly through, sort of trudging through season by season, not really having a direction or a sense of purpose or whatever. It's pretty clear where the club want to be and expect to be. And I said after the game, I hope the abiding memory with people will be discussed, the things we just discussed, the pre-match build-up, spending time with friends and family, soaking it all in, because although, you know, we lost and you don't want to be just that kind of team that turns up, you know, you look at teams like who've been in finals similar to us, you know, Bradford, who've had troubles, you know, after the League Cup final when they went to play Swansea, and they were similarly kind of defiant after being thrashed in that game. We know what we're capable of doing. And I think hopefully what I'm hoping anyway, I'm sure Andy's the same, is we use it as a platform, because we showed that we deserve to be on those stages. We weren't anywhere near as good as we could be on that day. And I think we did fold a little bit, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But I just hope that we can use it as a positive experience, even though we got thrashed, because, you know, these are the kind of occasions that we should be aspiring to hit. And there's no reason, particularly as the top clubs kind of focus on Europe, focus on the Champions League, maybe take these competitions less seriously. We might see more teams like Watford get into the final.
Yeah, absolutely. And we will actually get proper stuck in to the action itself. Stay where you are. We'll do that next.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
Okay, so... look, I know the scoreline is what it is, but this may sound a ridiculous thing to say, but I actually think Watford gave Man City more troubles than probably 80% of the Premier League sides have done this year. Is that a ridiculous thing to say?
It's not it's not a ridiculous thing to say.
Chances.
We did have chances.
There are so many sides in the Premier League this season who have lost 1 or 2-0, who've just shut up shop, right? And they've kind of delayed the inevitable. And Watford, of course, didn't do that. And there were flashpoints within that game. 0-0 and also 1-0 and 2-0, where if, I know we're talking about ifs, but that's football, isn't it?
Mm.
Where it could have gone in, and we're talking about a completely different game. And when obviously when the third goes in, it's just, it's irrelevant from that point, isn't it? And up until that point, honestly, I believe, I'm not just saying this because I'm doing a Watford show and I'm sat here with you, I honestly thought that Watford gave Man City a lot to think about, a lot more than significantly more other sides have done this season.
It's tricky because the last few weeks of the season, we've not looked, going forward, we've not looked like we've had many ideas. We've looked a bit bit blunt, a bit toothless. And it yesterday kind of all comes back to that Perea chance on 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Because you said this the other week when he had a chance. You felt that the Perea at the start of the season would have just lashed at that and just smashed it in. And he had a couple of moments in that game where he was through. I think there was one as well where he played it through to De La Feu. It may even be in the second half. I'm not too sure now. And even the commentator, when I was watching it, picked up on it. Was thinking, I think he squared up Riyad Mahrez as well on the edge of the box. You know, that's not Vincent Kompany or someone, you know, squaring him up. It's Riyad Mahrez. You back yourself, wouldn't you, as a winger, as a forward, to take a yard on him and just get a shot in.
You've got to.
But he played a nothing pass into De La Feu in a really good chance. And you don't get many of those opportunities and get in many of those positions against Man City.
Because we were all talking beforehand, and obviously we knew City were going to have majority of the possession. Yeah. Like, keep them at bay for 15, 20 minutes. Get yourself a good, solid foundation. Get yourself a bit of confidence. Know that you're in this final. They're going to have to work for it. And then grow from that. And after 10 minutes, we should have been 1-0 up. Now, throughout the week, they'll have obviously been watching Man City and know how they play. Edison comes off his line incredibly quickly and goes down low. Yeah. And watching it back, you sort of think he should be lifting that over Edison because there's no defender between Edison and the goal, and Perea should know that Edison's actually coming out to meet it and will be sliding in. And in fairness, Edison comes off his line incredibly quickly.
He's very good. He's very good.
And it's an excellent save, but that's kind of, you know, we haven't been clinical in the last few weeks, and it's come to haunt us in this game as well. But you're right, in the second half, there was another chance. I think it was, what, edge of the area?
De La Feu was in.
Yeah.
No, sorry.
Perea was in.
De La Feu made a decent run, and there was another option as well. And you just think that if that was flipped around the other side and it was Riyad Mahrez, knowing what he's like as a footballer, he wouldn't have played that pass in. If he finds himself in a position, one-on-one, on the edge of the area against a fullback or whoever, he'll do a step over, he'll find a yard, and he'll do something.
Mm.
And Perea just did nothing.
Our players recently just haven't taken risks. Mm. I don't mind a player taking a shot from 25 yards if it sails over the bar.
Yeah.
You've taken a risk.
Don't shoot, you don't score.
It's like Kompany. That was his first goal from outside the box in 40 attempts? Something like that? Something crazy? And one of them will fly in. And, you know, one of them may have flown in yesterday. And we didn't take those risks, even though we had possession on the edge of the area. We didn't take those risks until the game had gone, sadly.
Yeah, I think the problem was, wasn't it? The game plan worked for 25 minutes until they scored. I thought we were excellent up until that point. As Addy said, we should have been 1-0 up. The problem becomes when you're playing from behind against City, and you know they have so much of the ball, they just tuck in, they sit in, soak up the play, and then almost we have no outlet. We have nowhere to go. Deeney went from winning loads of balls in the first half, aerially, to winning nothing, pretty much, in the second half, feeding off scraps. The disappointing thing with Perea is he's shot of confidence, and you can see that.
Yeah.
I don't think his form has necessarily been great in 2019. Certainly not as good as it was in the first half of the season. So if you roles reverse to De La Feu's getting that ball, then you'd expect him to put it away. I agree, Andy. With Andy, he should have lifted it. He should have just dinked it over him. Easier said than done. In hindsight, of course, it's great. But when it goes to 1-0, you're just hoping we don't concede before half time. And I think as soon as it went in, it was, you know, you worried at that point. You were just hoping that Man City would not turn it on. And then when you look at people like Leroy Sané and De Bruyne, who comes on and gets man of the match, then that's what you know you're up against. But I was really pleased with the first 20, 25 minutes. I thought we were excellent. I thought Mariappa was marshalling the back four really well.
Cathcart, he made so many, the amount of times, again, you know, I'm watching it on commentary on television as opposed to being sat in the stands. The amount of times it was Cathcart, great block, great interception, great positioning. It did feel that, of course, you're going to be under that pressure, but you need your players to be on top form. It did feel that you were, and I think rightly, as you say, just the time that they did score after 26 minutes before half-time, when Watford had been playing so well, it was just that complete sucker blow, wasn't it? Sucker punch.
It was, yeah. And like Matt said, you know, the game plan was, for that first 20 minutes, was perfect. It was soak it up, catch him on the break, and it almost worked after 10 minutes with that Perea chance. But our defences again come back come back to haunt us, hasn't it? We've been talking throughout the season and before the season, in fact, that we needed to bolster up the defence a little bit. And a couple of defensive mistakes and suddenly City are 2-0 up before half-time. I don't think the game was quite lost before half-time. It was a sucker punch for sure going 2-0 down right before the half-time whistle. Because actually, when we've done it before, we've been in that position already against Wolves, but the first sort of 5-10 minutes of the second half, we were actually pretty good. And De La Feu was getting a lot of the ball. He was playing more of a central role and being allowed. He went on a fantastic run right at the heart of the City defence.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
That gave the crowd the confidence that we needed. But then when that third one went in, that was
game over.
That was officially game over. And again, I don't want to single out players, but that's come from Pereira not challenging for a header. Every time there's a header to be won from Bobby, and I'm sorry to say this, he turns to face the player, never looks at the ball, and doesn't really challenge for it. He's too soft when it comes out. If that's Troy Deeney, Troy's going in all guns blazing, he wants to win that ball. Bobby doesn't want to win that ball. Yeah. And that's where the play fell into City's possession, and they broke up field and they scored the third.
But that's standard, though, isn't it, with those types of players? Again, flipping it around, being someone who's watched Riyad Mahrez, he wouldn't challenge for that.
But it's an FA Cup final.
I know, but that's
put
just...
Put your body on the line.
That's just who they are.
It's frustrating.
I know, but do you know what I mean? You can't say that... You can't ask somebody to be different than they've been their entire career.
I think it's the lack of, or from what is perceived from the stands, to be a lack of physicality.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't win the ball, fine, at least challenge for it, sort of thing.
Yeah, I think the only thing in defence of Pereira is that, if he's not an out-and-out winger, which he isn't, then he's been asked to do a winger's job, which is the track back, which is the aerial stuff, which he's not known for. And I think, we've got away with it at times this season, asking people to do roles they're unaccustomed to. But that is basically defending. And I think we have a point. And of course, Doucouré gave the ball away for the first goal. He was overplaying. And that was frustrating because, from where I was sat, you could see what was going to happen from that moment. Obviously, Gomez, a little bit caught out for the second one, his positioning-wise. I think he overcommitted. But hard to be too critical. The disappointing thing was when the heads went after the third, because that's, a 3-0. If you lose 3-0, it's kind of, expected almost.
Teams have lost 3-0 to Man City before.
Yeah. I mean, lots of teams have conceded 5 or more, but not in a cup final. So that was what really stung most.
Okay.
Pardon the pun.
Well, these are the views of Andy and Matt in the studio. We are going to continue to get them up until 8:30 this evening. Just a reminder, it is an extended show. But up next, we're going to speak to former Watford midfielder Derek Payne about that game yesterday, of course.
This is Love Sport.
But we can speak now, though, to former Watford midfielder Derek Payne. He's on the line now. Derek, a very good evening.
Evening, Jake.
Derek, were you at Wembley yesterday?
Yes, I was, yes. I was on the commentary.
Oh, so talk us about kind of the experience then and your views on that day. Was it like anything you've ever experienced as a Watford player and also, I presume, as a Watford fan?
No, obviously, like the size of that game, the magnitude of it, the amount of people that watch it, it was obviously a very, very big game for the club. And the experience of it all was, you always knew it was going to be a tough ask to try and beat such a good side as Man City. You know, the way they've done it this year, them and Liverpool, they've kind of took it a stage higher. They took it to another level. So there's always going to be a difficult ask. And I think Watford, they might be a little bit disappointed today about their performance, but they had to work hard to get there. They had to beat 3 Premier League teams and they had the great semi-final win over Wolves. So there's lots of good memories that I think in a couple of weeks they'll look back on and think it was a good cup run, but ultimately you come up against a side like Man City, it was never going to be easy.
No, it never was, but yeah, good point there. So Derek, I did feel though that the way that Watford play and the way they've set up against these bigger sides throughout the season, that there was more of a chance for Watford winning than perhaps other sides within the Premier League, but at the same time it was always going to be either a Watford win or perhaps a heavy defeat because the way they play relatively open, is that a fair assessment?
Well, I think it's hard. They've tried to over the last couple of years, they're definitely improving against the so-called top six and they're getting closer to them, but it's just that final hurdle now, and I think they'll learn a lot obviously from the defeats this season against the top six. We managed to beat Spurs at home, so that's something. They managed to beat one of them at home, and it's definitely narrowing the gap on when we play them, as in usually it was like defend and really lots of men behind the ball and hope you know, hope that you can frustrate them and maybe get something on a set piece. But they have moved on from that. And like you said, I think the good start they started the game really well. And I thought Man City were a little bit sloppy. And Pereira then misses the chance. You've got the handball shout. And I think maybe they got a little bit carried away, you know, and thought, yeah, City are here for the taking. And it kind of left us a little bit open.
Hi there, Derek. Andy here. How do teams like Watford compete against a side like Manchester City? Because obviously City have dominated the Premier League this season compared to the clubs like, you know, Wolves, Leicester, Everton, Watford. The gap is sort of widening between Liverpool and City and the rest of the league. How do clubs like the size of Watford compete with something like that?
Hello, Andy. I think you've got to look at what Leicester done a few seasons back. I think that always... You have to look at that, and that has to give you hope. And that was built on, that's built on team spirit. That's like having a real work ethic, a real, obviously the manager's got to be good. Tactically, you've got to be right. You've got to get so many things right against these sort of sides, and especially Man City. I think Man City have took it to another level. The way they rotate, the way they interchange positions is very hard to mark against. But in answer to your question, you've got to look at getting the right characters in, and having, when I say that, you need team players. You need to be a unit against them. And then obviously, if you can find some little stars there, you know, we had Richarlison and we sold him on. If you can find like the unexpected players that are that good, that maybe you get, gives you that little bit extra quality that maybe you can hurt teams. I mean, we've got Delafeu who on his day can hurt them big teams. So maybe if you can find one or two more of them, which isn't easy, obviously. But ultimately, teams like Watford have to have that team spirit, have to be together, and you have to beat them. You have to be a team. You're not going to do it trying to do it one and two of you doing it, an individual magic. You have to be a team.
And Derek, thoughts will quickly turn to the summer and obviously the transfer window and potential players that might come into Watford. Where do you see Watford needing to strengthen? Is it just about the defence, or do we need perhaps a winger and maybe another striker?
Yeah, no, I think like you said, defence is definitely an area we've got to look at. And we've got to look at also, you know, Hollabas has had a really good season, but he's 34 now. He's not getting any younger. The full-back areas, I feel, has been a little bit of a problem. And obviously centre halves, we could strengthen definitely defensively, like you just said. But also, you know, you are always looking to change. And I think if we could find a goal scorer in the way of like a Kevin Phillips, like a Poacher, that would really help things, because, you know, we have some great play. We can play good between both boxes. We just need that clinical striker that's going to score you one every two games. But they're not easy to find, you know.
Do you think this was a big moment for the football club, though, going forward with regards to pushing on? Because, you know, it was the best points tally, wasn't it, in the Premier League, and reaching the FA Cup final itself is a huge achievement. Now, you know, we're not going to go into each season hoping to kind of better that, but it certainly allows the club to dream, doesn't it? Whereas before, it really was just a dream.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to build on... You can't stand still in football. That's one thing you can't do. You can't rest on your laurels. And I think when, you know, you look at Man City, he keeps motivating them and they keep coming back and they keep winning things. And that's just an example of you can't stand still. So Watford, with this good season, like you said, record points total, they gain confidence. You can see the experience that they feel like they're an established Premier League club. It's now, can they kick on again? You know, when I say kick on again, I mean, if you can beat that points tally next year, And okay, and maybe you don't get, maybe come 12th or something. As long as you're progressing, and it looks like you're progressing, I think we would have learned a lot from yesterday and this season. And I think Javi Gracia would have learned a lot as well. That's his first full season in English Premier League. So I expect us to have learned a lot. And I expect if we recruit well, we'll be looking to build on this season, surely. I don't think they want to go backwards. They're an ambitious club. And Scott Duxbury and Gino Pozzo, they're ambitious and they want to keep doing well.
Yeah, and just a word, Derek, on that man, Javi. He has had a fantastic season. He's still obviously learning the Premier League, but he's clearly adjusted and adapted to it very well. He's found a home at Watford. There has been the odd link of some admiring glances from some other football clubs at Javi. Is there any fears that the like of Javi, or even some of the players, because of the season that they've had, could get picked off, like tends to happen, doesn't it, with a so-called smaller side in the Premier League when they perform so well like Watford have done this season?
Yeah, they've always got to be wary. Obviously, that's the flip side of it. When you do well, when you're a side like Watford, that obviously the bigger teams, they come looking for your players. And like you said, maybe the head coach. And yeah, we've heard the rumours about Chelsea maybe interested in him.
Yeah, no, and say touch wood that they don't materialise. Derek, thank you very much for your time this evening.
Seems to be happy. And I think he likes the club, a club like him. And sometimes is it better the devil you know? But obviously he's ambitious. So for me, I hope we hold on to him because for the reasons I said, I think he would have learnt a lot this season. He's done very well, but he'll know he was a player himself, and you got to keep learning. You never know the job, and you keep learning day by day. You're never an expert at it. So I hope they keep him definitely. But then the other side of it, if you lose players. We've got a good model where they have other players ready. They're very good, if they know someone's going to go, I'm sure they'll have a couple of players lined up and they'll be looking to get good replacements in if they lose players.
Absolutely. Derek, thank you very much for your time this evening, mate. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Jake. Thank you.
No worries. There was Derek Payne there, former Watford and fielder. His views yesterday on that game. We need to take a break. When we come back, there will be a Eurovision song for you, so naturally you don't want to move anywhere, and then we continue of course to discuss that day yesterday at Wembley.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
First goal yesterday, I thought, and I was surprised actually, that initially in the commentary it wasn't brought up, and it's not been brought up by either of you two this evening. I thought Kiko Femenia was really quite questionable in his defence, initially losing the header to David Silva, who is David Silva and smaller than most teenagers. And then secondly, when the ball came back in, he was really easily kind of, you know, Silva holds him off it really quite easily. I thought, yeah, I'm surprised at how little, you're talking about Doucouré losing the ball in the build-up, I thought Femenia was as culpable, if I'm completely honest, Matt.
Yeah, I think there was quite a large gap. I think at the time, I haven't actually watched the highlights because I can't face it. Ultimately, I think all the mind is very much focused on Doucouré, partly because, of course, he's not usually that casual in possession. And suddenly you're losing it, and then before you know it, it's in the back of the net. So it happened in a split second. But Femenia, there was a bit of a gap. I think he wouldn't have had that time if it wasn't for that. And yes, he does get pressed aside rather easily.
Yeah, disappointed, wasn't it? Because Kiko is usually one of the more reliable figures in the
just
back line.
It was soft.
It was really soft, and I think Watford, Sterling and Mahrez were, you know, pulling Watford left and right throughout that first half.
I thought Mahrez had Halobas on toast, frankly.
Yeah, yeah, I mean...
But again, you can't be completely upset by that. You're talking about earlier with Namu Pereira not making effort, and I'm not suggesting that Kiko didn't, but it just felt that it was weak and he could have done better. He went for it, but, you know, if that was someone else in the Man City team, or switch it around and it was a Watford player in that position, then you'd understand maybe the fullback losing that duel, but you just don't expect your fullback to lose twice in an aerial duel to David Silva in such a short space of time. It was so costly.
They were soft goals to give away.
Yeah.
Weren't they? Really soft goals to fall behind to. Like the ones in the second half on the counter-attack were finished well, but to go behind to sort of defensive errors, and then again shortly before half time, I think it was maybe a miscommunication between Gomez and Kiko. Presumably they thought the ball was going out of play, and Sterling, in fairness to him, has nipped round the back and been able to poke the ball back into play, and Jesus has tapped it in. Disappointing to be sort of looking back, not at sort of City brilliance, but Watford's naivety, I guess.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And obviously the what if moments we talked about at the beginning, the whole Pereira thing, I think that was the glaring moment. I think everyone knew it at the time. And then, you know, almost kind of making those basic errors. I think going in, we always knew the game plan had to be perfect for large swathes of that, because we weren't going to have the ball and we'd have to be patient. But we're not a team, as we've spoken about so many times, we're not that good at sitting in. So we just had to win those one-on-one battles. And I don't think we did that across the pitch, really. I think Deeney had the beating of Kompany in the first half. I thought he was outstanding first half. And then obviously, understandably, as the game slipped away, we kind of lost that a little bit. But too many players just lost the one-on-one battles, and then against a team like City, can't afford to do that.
Yeah. Just a word on Kevin De Bruyne, by the way, because obviously he came on as a substitute. He did have an impact, no doubt about it. Did he make that much of an impact to be named man of the match? Because, again, watching through the television, I could literally hear the laughs and the jeers and the murmurs of people like, what? Mm. When that was announced. Was he that good? Did he change the game that much?
Well, firstly, it says a lot that City make their...
Or was this Jermaine Genius been a rubbish pundit?
Well, it says a lot that City like make their first sub, Mahrez comes off, Sané comes on, and then their second sub is whoever comes off and De Bruyne comes on. And we're, you know, bringing on, you know, Tom Cleverley. No disrespect to Tom, but that's like the golfing class, isn't it? But yeah, when that was announced, all the fans around me were thinking, like, what? He's played like 20 minutes, 25 minutes?
2-0 when he came on, yeah.
Something like that. And yeah. I thought Sterling would have got it for two goals and just playing the match.
Is it two goals or a hat-trick?
It was two goals because the second goal...
Sky have still given it to Sterling.
Really?
Yeah.
But because the ball... This is the second goal we're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the ball didn't cross the line until Jesus walloped it in, I think.
Well, no, it was Jesus'
flick,
which Sterling walloped in.
Oh, right. Oh, sorry.
But no,
this is
the confusion.
There's too many goals, man.
Sorry. Yeah. So I've heard that Sterling is really upset because he thought, you know, when a ball goes in the back of a net, he thought he was just smashing it in, that it was already a goal, but didn't realise it hadn't actually crossed the line already. So he didn't mean to do it. So he thought it was Jesus' goal, but I believe, and as things stand, I think it's still being given to Sterling. So Sterling theoretically has an FA Cup final hat-trick.
Oh, fair play. Well, well done, Raheem.
Yeah.
But I did think Raheem should have won man of the match. It's weird, isn't it? A player doesn't play the entire match, or at least the majority of it, and wins the man of the match award. But I was chatting to my flatmate earlier because he sat home and watched it, and I mean, we get a completely different perspective rather of the game stood in the stand than we do on the TV, and he ripped Watford to shreds really after he came on. So there's an argument there for it, but I feel a bit, you know, I don't really care. Yeah. If I'm being honest,
it's a bit inconsequential, isn't it?
I thought I'd ask anyway. But you bring up the fact that they were able to make those substitutions. Yeah. Now, look, it's a given that Watford don't have that same depth. But at the same time, I thought it highlighted just how little depth you had, because you talked about Pereira. He is low on confidence. He's been doing that for weeks, been getting in decent positions and not scoring. If that was a Man City side, he wouldn't have started that game yesterday. And it got to the point where you're losing the game, but you were still in it, where other sides would have made a change, and it just felt that Watford weren't able to make those changes, that was the best they had already on the pitch.
Yeah, we've talked about it a lot. I think we gave Ken Semmer the benefit of the doubt, I think, earlier in the season. Well,
it demonstrated yesterday.
Demonstrated,
he has no trust.
Yeah, I think a lot of it was... Ken's a strange one because he's, you know, I'm not a massive fan. I know he's not 6 foot, but I'm pretty sure close to 6 foot. I'm not a big fan of Big Wiggins. I think he doesn't always use his sort of physicality to a bit like Isaac Success, actually. Success, I think, is a frustrating player because he's got all the attributes, but he just doesn't use it. He doesn't get much game time, admittedly. But it kind of showed that Watford are very reliant on Pereira and De La Feo as the kind of big game players. De La Feo obviously deservedly started. Pereira probably shouldn't have started if we had those resources. We just didn't have it. And unfortunately, that was the way it was. I think Andre Gray coming on, you know, De Bruyne getting man of the match might well have had something to do with the fact that we were very, very, very high in terms of our defensive line and pressing, even, you know, for a game that was by all means out of our reach at that point, you know. But you can't blame Gracia for, you know, actually putting out, making those changes, being a bit aggressive. We got punished because of it, but I'd rather we went for it.
And it kind of highlights what needs to happen in the transfer window in the summer, because we had this conversation a year ago that Watford needs
a striker
winger, and quality centre backs.
Yeah,
and we still don't have it. And it's a big summer, not just for Watford, but I think, you know, for the likes of Wolves, Leicester, Everton, because I think they're all
it's always the
they're
same,
all going to get
it?
Better, but we can't be left behind.
What I find interesting is I remember saying this last season, for almost a mid-table club or someone with aspirations like the clubs that we both support, almost feels like you have to spend £100 million just to stand still. Because everyone else is spending so much. Do you have that belief? And we will talk about later about hopes and aspirations for next season, that you will get that kind of backing to go and improve.
Yeah, I think so. I think we will definitely strengthen. I think one of the things that we didn't do last summer is I mean, we had this discussion before. Domingos Quina was our transfer deadline day signing. He's been brilliant for us. He won, I think, Young Player of the Year and has really taken good strides. But it puts into perspective that our back four is £1.8 million worth of talent. You know, Craig Cathcart, I still think, is a starting centre-back in the Premier League. I still think he's been excellent. But with due respect to Eddie Marapo, good for the first half an hour, he should not be a starting centre-back. And I think that's not a dig at him as much as it is at Christian Cabaselli, who I think has regressed a little bit this year. You know, a year ago, we were talking about him and Craig being kind of the spearheads. Obviously, Prodo hasn't played and Britos is probably leaving. So we do need a centre-back. That was clear before. I think, if anything, it's only grown more glaring after yesterday.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And as promised, we will talk about that more later on in the show. We're on to 8:30 this evening.
Love Sport.
Very shortly joined by WD18 Watford Fan Channel presenter Jacob Coulshaw to give his views on the game yesterday. Jacob, I saw he was involved in some game beforehand at Watford. He was on the pitch on Vicarage Road. What was that all about?
So, Moplay, one
of...
Did
you not get invited?
One of what? Well, evidently not. I think I'm a bit too lazy, I think. That when you I've played on the pitch before, so it was all right. But once you step onto that pitch, it is huge.
Yeah.
Like, it is massive. And you're out of breath after, like, first 10 minutes. But Moplay, I think one of Watford's sponsors, ran a competition where you could play on the pitch. So, yeah, he and a couple of the From the Rickering guys as well got the chance to... I mean, we can ask Jacob about it. Play against some former Watford legends. So, very jealous. And he's bound to tell us he scored a goal at the Rookery end.
Let's start there, shall we? Hello, Jacob.
Hi, guys. You're right.
Yeah, right, mate. Look, we're just talking about that game you played before heading off to Wembley. Saw your video. Tell us all about it. You scored, didn't you, Vicarage Road?
Yeah, it was a brilliant day on Friday. So it was kind of social media influencers in the kind of the Watford FC hashtag versus Watford legends and competition winners through Moplay, Watford sleeve sponsor. So I got the chance to play against Alec Chamberlain, Tommy Mooney, Tommy Smith, Jay Demerit, Lloyd Doyley, Micah Hyde. It was a brilliant day. Adam Leventhal was there as well, the Sky Sports News presenter. So, no, overall, it was a brilliant day. Scored 3 goals. One got disallowed as well, so I should have had a hat-trick. But, no, overall, it was a really
good
day.
Didn't that
have
VAR?
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, the Rhino gave me offside, but I put one past Alec Chamberlain again, so I could have had a hat-trick against Alec Chamberlain. I put that with CB.
And Jacob, when you're making your debut for Watford...
Am I going to make my debut? I should have made it yesterday.
Harry's not signed you on for next season then.
I thought it was going to be a scout in the Elton John stand to see where you put one part off Alec Chamberlain, but no.
There's always that dream, isn't there? If you play like any sort of charity match or fun game, like, oh, maybe there's a scout for United here or something.
Oh, mate, so come on then. Let's talk about the day yesterday. God. Let's start about the beginning, the occasion. It must have been pretty cool still.
Yeah, no, before the game, I was so proud to be there, as I think every other Watford fan was. It was, I think I've said it to a lot of people, it was brilliant up until kickoff, really, because all the anticipation, everyone was loving life, and we were buzzing to see your football club, your hometown, your local club in the FA Cup final on the big stage. And then it kicked off, and it just kind of went downhill from there, really. We started okay. And I've said it to Andy, I messaged him and I said, and we both agreed, that Pereira chance, I mean, if that goes in, it completely changes the complexion of the game. Granted, we might have still lost, but it just changed the dynamic of it. And maybe City have to chase the game a little bit more than they did. But as soon as that chance missed, you kind of just felt it wasn't going to be our day. And then obviously they went up the other end and we conceded some soft goals yesterday. And that was probably the one frustrating thing, because they were avoidable. I think particularly the first goal, the third goal were poor. But no, overall, it was frustrating because they were goals. They weren't worldies. It was poor defending at times. And we let ourselves down. But, you know, overall, from off the pitch, I thought we were phenomenal. On it, not so good.
And Jacob, do you think the setup was right going into the game? Because we kind of, in the past few weeks when we've been previewing this game, we've always gone back to that night at the Etihad, where Watford set up really defensively, 4-5-1. You know, Gray started, Success started, Britos and Cabaselli were our starting centre-backs that night. And we kept City at bay for the first 45 minutes, and then an incorrect offside decision obviously opened the scoring for the hosts. Do you think Harry should have gone with not necessarily the same team, but certainly the same sort of setup? Because yesterday it almost felt like it was a standard 4-4-2 with Deulofeu and Deeney. Do you think that was the right thing to do?
No, I don't think it was. I think, as you mentioned, that 4-5-1 formation, I think we did need an extra man in midfield. And I said it to my dad pre-match, I just think we're going to get overrun in there. And Decorenk had a massive task to deal with. David Silva, Gundogan, they were just running the game, really. And it was tough for them. And those two have been brilliant for us this season. And I think they just needed a little bit more help in there. Maybe put Tom Cleverley in. I know Nathaniel Chalobah could have played. Just someone just shore up in the middle, because Delafeu, yeah, he kept dropping deep to trying to pick up the ball. That then invited a lot of pressure onto us. Deeney didn't do a lot, really, because we didn't play to his strengths. I can't really remember one long ball we played to him and really test City's back line aerially. So it was a weird one. Yeah, I think I probably would have put an extra man in midfield. I didn't really blame him for the back line he picked. Obviously, the same back line that played against Wolves that did well in the end. But I think particularly I would have put an extra man in midfield because we were getting overrun. And I thought he was going to do that half-time, Javi, but he opted not to. And in the end, it came to pay.
And of course, Jacob, all eyes now will turn to next season and potential incomings for Watford. Are you very much in the camp that thinks the defensive reinforcements is really where our sort of focus needs to be?
Yeah, I think anyone who could see it needs to know that we do need some reinforcements in the back line. I think someone put a tweet out, and I think the whole of our back four yesterday cost a total of £2 million. Three of out of the four were bought on a free. And I'm not saying that's a sign of how good a player is or not, but and I think someone tweeted the other week that Cathcart and Mariap were the same two centre-backs that were playing seven years ago away at Plymouth or something. It was an incredible stat. So I think that says it all, really. I think, obviously, Adrian Mariette has been a fantastic servant at Watford Football Club, but time has to move on, and we've got to bring someone else in. He's a brilliant squad player, Mariette, but is he first-choice centre-half? I'm not too sure. Craig Cathcart. I think someone next to him may be a little bit more assured. He'd look a little bit better, but we definitely need a centre-back in this window. I don't care where it comes from, but we do really need a centre-back. I think the full-backs aren't really an issue. We've got Adam Messina and Jose Holobas. And Kiko and Darian Matt. So we're pretty strong in the fullback areas, but it's centre back where we really do need to reinforce. And hopefully coming to next season, we've bolstered in that area.
Is there not an argument, though, Jacob, to say that ultimately you could kind of do with strength in everywhere?
Yeah, I mean, if it was Football Manager, you could do that. But at the end of the day, you've got to look at what we've got. And I think you look at the two central midfielders, if we manage to keep it on to Cora and Kapu, I think one of the best midfield duos, particularly anyway, outside the top six, if not the league. And then you can build the team around them. And particularly Kapu has been phenomenal for us this season. I think it's a big question mark whether Delafeu is going to go. I know there's a big price tag on him. So it's going to be really dependent on whether these players do move on, whether we'll have to get more players in. But I think just looking at the squad we have at the moment, I personally think we need a left winger. I think Pereira is going to go in the summer. And I think we need a centre-half. They were the two kind of key areas for me. And we'll have to see what happens, whether the Decore or Delafeu, our two star men, do move on. If they do, then we have to reinforce there. But at the moment, if I was going to pick two areas, it'd have to be centre-half and on the left.
Now, Jacob, you were actually pitch side at Wembley before the game yesterday. Tell us about that. What were you doing?
Yeah, so if anyone was at Wembley yesterday, I was on the club VT, which was trying to get like the fans pumped up. I think it was me, Roy Moore, the leader of the 1881. I think John from the Rookery M was on it. And the FA invited me down to do a quick pre-match interview pitch side with Emma Saunders, the Watford FC stadium announcer. And yeah, just gave my initial reaction to the team lineup. It was obviously played out at Wembley. And yeah, it was a brilliant experience, something I didn't really expect to be doing, having an interview at Wembley. So no, it was really unexpected. The FA just got in touch, and obviously I was willing to do it. It was an amazing opportunity. And yeah, just to play that little small part in what was a very, well, in the end, not a very good day, but a historic day for the club to get to the FA Cup final for the second time. It was a real honour.
Cheers, mate. Thanks for your time, Jacob.
Top man. Thank you, mate.
No worries. That's Jacob Coulshaw, WD18, Watford Fan Channel host. Need to take a break when we come back. We will start to look forward. Let's do that, shall we? Hopes for next season. How do we go about bettering what has been ultimately the best season for a Watford fan in the Premier League? We'll do that next. Watford Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
Let's look forward, shall we? still? Are you able to see the positives of this season? Are we at that point yet? Are we still very much thinking about Ramon Pereira's chance? Have we forgotten about that yet?
I think we'll be waking up in our sleep because of nightmares of that miss for years to come, I think. But yeah, no, there are positives to take from it. I think, yes, obviously the result, you know, wasn't great, and it was, in all honesty, a bit embarrassing. But what we can take from it is, you know, that day will live with us, or that experience will live with us forever. Mm. And as much as, you know, Wolves fans chip in on Twitter and have a go at us because of Troy Deeney's comments after the Wolves win, they didn't have that. They haven't had that the week that we've had in the build-up to that, and feeling their, you know, a community come together. They've not had that experience this season of standing there listening to Abide With Me before the game and hearing that roar of the crowd as the teams walk out. And I think experiencing that side of it and being able to share that day with my family and meeting a lot of my friends there as well is what will stay in my mind. And that's a story, you know, in 20 odd years time, yeah. In the younger generations of Watford fans, you know, they might come and ask us, oh, tell us about the FA Cup run in 2019. And we'll be able to share those stories with them. And that's going to be what we can take away from that day.
But going forward, Matt, how do you better what you've done last season? Is it about, because you've had this the last few seasons, I suppose relatively similarly with Spurs, where it was deemed a successful window whether they kept their players as opposed to the ones that they brought in because of, you know, that team ethos that they had. And you just got that impression the longer that group stayed together, you know, the best chance that they would have as perhaps progressing as a football club. Could the same be said for this Watford side? Because, again, I believe quite similarly to Spurs, you're not going to invest heavily. You know, there will be the likes of Leicester and Everton and Wolves, the clubs that finished, and West Ham, those teams in around you. I reckon they'll spend easily double what Watford do this summer. It's all about, is it not, keeping this group together?
I think it is. I the comparison that worries me a little bit is Southampton, in a similar mould where they lost a lot of their key players and the replacements didn't live up to their expectations, and they've obviously struggled the last couple of years. And that's, I know Southampton will probably argue they're a bigger club than us, but if you're going for comparisons, then that's one that jumps to mind.
Right now, absolutely not.
Yeah, and of course, we do need to strengthen. I think the key thing for us is not to get complacent and believe that. I think Derek Payne was spot on when he said you can't stand still. And I think that's really what we feel as a club, that we have an opportunity now to build on something. You've talked about it as well. This is an opportunity for us to use the positives from this cup run, from this experience, and try and relive these moments again and not just be something that's a once in a blue moon occasion, but, you know, sorry, not, pardon the pun, blue moon, not intentional.
Oh, why'd you have to say it?
Obviously, we need to make sure that these are occasions that we're not talking about for, you know, 35 years time that was the last time we did it. This is an opportunity for us to deliver something really, really, you know, something quite regular. I'm not saying we'll get to a final every year, but we're now in that, you know, situation now. We're an established Premier League side. It comes a point where we might have to open that checkbook in order to, you know, to sort of compete, because the margins do grow and the golfing class grows every year. What I don't want us to do is just throw money and, you know, and aimlessly at players just to try and compete. We need to kind of retain the model we've had for so many years, which is the scouting network, the kind of shrewd buys, sell on value, that kind of thing. There's no reason why we can't do it, but as you say, every team's going to get stronger.
It's a big summer, isn't it? Because obviously we've seen this season we can compete with the teams just outside the big six. And, you know, if the owners are serious about this ambition of wanting to play in Europe, those sides, like we said, Leicester, Everton, Wolves are going to get stronger, and they do have the money to sort of chuck at it a little bit. West Ham as well, and we need to be clever about it, and we need to sign players in those key areas that need addressing quite seriously. You know, we signed Foster in the summer gone, because, you know, I think Foster was an improvement on Gomez. As much as I love Gomez, Foster's a better keeper, and we've been saying, you know, Gomez was getting old. We need a new keeper, and we need to be smart about who we sign in the summer. It's a big summer. I don't expect them to chuck a whole load of money. I think, you know, 80 million is still the most we've ever spent.
A huge amount of investment this summer, really, was there? You know, no. I remember being sat here talking about wanting more, and it, I mean, we ended up not really talking about it because of how good the season has been. But, I mean, ultimately, if we do look back, it wasn't a massively invested in squad in January or last summer. There's two windows, really, where you've just kept the squad together.
Yeah. And I think that's down to the good coaching from Javi and sort of the continuity that we've had from last season going into this season has played to our benefit. But there have been at times, whilst we've had a fantastic season, has sort of papered over the cracks a little bit of where our weaknesses lie. You know, we do have a very weak defence, which isn't at the level that it should be to compete against these sides. So it's going to be interesting to see what we do. But I think there's been enough evidence on show and that the Pozzos can sort of say, right, we've got the right man in charge. We've not had that for the last few seasons. He needs backing, and you know, we've got a strong foundation now. Let's build on it.
Yeah, I my big fear is that the narrative of this season will be of disappointment. And I know, I mean, obviously losing 6-0 is going to hurt, and it's going to hurt for a long time. But I hope the actual overwhelming arc of this season is that we've taken a big step forward. Yes, this last month of the season was disappointing. Yes, we missed out on Europe. And yes, we lost the FA Cup final quite heavily. But actually, there's a sense, a feeling that we're moving forward. And to have done that, as Andy said, with a squad that, for intents and purposes, you know, Jacob made the point, Mariappa and Cathcart played against Plymouth about 10 years ago. I mean, that's extraordinary when you put it like that. We know where we need to improve. It's pretty clear. It's not like we're kind of aimlessly trudging around, not really knowing, having answers. Or if you're a Man United, for example, where their transfer strategy is a bit all over the place, we know where we need to improve. I think it's just a case of doing it now and executing and kind of being a bit bold, maybe taking a few risks, which we haven't necessarily done, because there is a potential at this club, and Duxbury and Pozzo know that. And it's just a case of just trying to find ways in an ever-improving sort of teams around us. You know, talk about the second league of the Premier League, the best of the rest. That's getting better every year. And yeah. Hopefully with Wolves having European aspirations, they'll be distracted next year. But you can't guarantee that's going to happen. They're going to get better. They just spent £30 million on Raul Jimenez. You know, Everton are going to spend money. And Leicester, I think, are going to be one to watch next year. So yeah. You'll be pleased to hear that. So
cheers, mate. So how do Watford improve? I want names. I want to get proper stuck into it. Positions. We'll do that next. 10 minutes left here on the Watford Fan Show.
This is Love Sport.
So how do Watford improve next season? We've discussed maybe about the finances that those other sides in and around them have, and perhaps we accept that Watford would be a little bit more creative, as they have been over the last few years, as when it comes to recruiting. But as Jacob said, this isn't Football Manager, but let's pretend for a second it is. If you want to bring in a central defender or a fullback or just a position, someone gettable, give me names. Who would you like to see come in? Who do you think would fit in?
Oh, let's talk Vincent Kompany out of his move to Anderlecht.
Yeah. Vincent Kompany is now not attainable.
Ah, yeah, that's a bummer. Well, we spoke, you might remember earlier in the year, I can't remember when it was, we spoke about a South Korean centre-back who Watford, this must have been January time, that Watford were rumoured to be looking at. And his name is Kim Min Jae, or is better known as the Monster.
The Monster.
And we had a look at his stats. It would have been was it the Asian Cup? I forget. Yeah, forget which tournament it was. South Korean international scores goals as well. He's over 6 foot, because that's been the thing that we've sort of highlighted constantly. Watford are a small team. You know, we had West Ham came to Vicarage Road obviously last week. I forget which player it was, but we set up for set pieces and they're like a foot above us, and we really struggle. Other than Deeney, I don't think we've got someone who stands out as a good header of the ball. You wouldn't necessarily say someone
top attribute. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And I think that's what I'd like to see. Obviously it's very difficult to find someone of that caliber. But
do you
want
think
someone...
you're going to be shopping in the market with Premier League and Championship players, or do you think you'll continue to look abroad for the likes of a South Korean international?
I think we'll look abroad. I think that's how our model works. It's to buy relatively unknown players like Richarlison, for instance, and sell them at a high price.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think also you've got to remember is the British market is inflated. So you take Alfie Mawson, for example. Producer Dom won't like me reminding him of this. You know, he's somebody that would have been linked to a team like Watford, you know, maybe a season ago, might have been someone you'd talked about, but is going to cost maybe 5-10 million more than someone you can get abroad. So it might be we take a punt on someone that's playing, I don't know, in Germany or Italy or somewhere like that. And it might be someone we've never heard of, but if you can do a job, get him in.
Would you not like, though, to go a bit more down the tried and tested route?
I'm not against it.
No, I'm not against it either, because then you know what you're getting, sort of, which has been... There's been a lot of signings in the Potsdam era history that, you know, all we've really known about players is there's a YouTube compilation online. and that's been it. And there's been players we've signed, you know, we've signed a lot of players that have gone on to do nothing.
Yeah.
Like Merkel, for instance, he came with, this was what, 20?
I remember watching Merkel for AC Milan thinking, this guy is the...
Yeah, came on, made his debut, got red cards, and that was it.
Yeah.
Nothing.
He's playing Dutch second division now.
Is he?
Yeah, actually, I Wikipedia the other day.
That is weird.
I'm a weird man.
We've ruined a lot of careers since the Potsdam took over. But that's, you know, players have come and gone, and there's been lots of players who just haven't lived up to their potential, and that's been the issue since the Potsdam took over. It's sort of, you know, buy a lot, and maybe one or two go on to
sting
to
enough something at a wall.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. Yeah, we're not past watershed just yet, are we?
Yeah, and you look at people like Ben Wilmot as well. He's a bit raw.
Has he played enough at Udinese? Do we know? I've seen a few times.
Yeah,
he's tweeting about stuff.
A few games. Yeah, I wouldn't know the number, but I mean that experience will do him the world of good. And I think maybe he's maybe a season shy of being a potential starter. I think he probably needs a little bit more time.
Yeah.
But then you look at teams like Bournemouth, who've just gone and signed Lloyd Kelly from Bristol City. So, yeah. I mean, that's the kind of market I'd like us to do a little bit of. I know they signed Meppham in January as well. Maybe a top championship.
David Brooks, you know, they've got it sussed in terms of a scouting department.
But we've
Meppham, that's Kelly, that's good.
It is good.
And all kind of between the £10-15 million mark. Mm. That's all, you know, that's realistic.
It is realistic. And like we said, I don't think Watford are going to be... I think we might chuck maybe max 25 million at a player, but I can't see us spending more than say 30 on someone. Which, you know, if you're a club like Everton or Leicester, you've kind of got the resources available to do just that. I don't think Watford are at that stage just yet, even after the Richarlison sale last summer.
Of course, we could always tap into the loan market. I was reading something about Mason Mount, and I'm not saying we're going to get him. You know, he'll probably be playing for Chelsea next year, but that kind of thing, someone who's excelled in the Championship, who's ready to take that step up, kind of what we used to do.
Harry Wilson, Liverpool.
Exactly, yeah.
That's someone a Premier League club needs to come snap up next season.
And they will do. And, you know, we used to do it the opposite. We used to take players like Lansbury and Cleverley when we're in the Championship and make them better players. And I think there'll be lots of players you'll be talking about in that bracket who are ready to take the step up the Premier League, but not good enough to play for their parent clubs yet. Yep. Who might want to come to Watford, and I think that'd be good for both.
Mm. Are we forgotten about now? Are we happy? Have we got enough off our chest?
Yeah, that was
it was very cathartic. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's the word I was looking for. I couldn't say it. But,
jinx.
Well, I'm very pleased that Love Sport has been able to give you that platform to do so this evening. Andy, Matt, a pleasure as always. Watford Fan Show. We'll be back next Sunday, the same time, 7 until 8pm.
This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's Upwork.com, Upwork.com.